Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, Gary.
Hello, Guy. So we've got a bit of a hero of yours on today.
Very, very much a hero, Gary. And talking of heroes, can I just say, for our listeners, those who don't know, to congratulate you, because if you don't know, Gary was awarded the BMI Icon Award at London Savoy Hotel just a few days ago.
Thank you. And that's not the Body Mass Index Award, even though I am ripped. It's the Broadcast Music Incorporated Award. And thank you, Guy. And that was, I was actually racked with nerves, and my self-doubt and my imposter syndrome were very much the fore. And, it was a room full of industry people and artists, and to get up and get that award, you know, you just feel uncomfortable, don't you? So I think I was the most nervous I'd ever been on a stage.
Oh, bless you. That's very sweet. It was nice. Yeah, nice your brother was there, and it was very nice of you to name check the band the way you did. It was very good. You were very generous, as you often are.
Thank you. Anyway, back to your hero, Derek Smalls.
Yes. Derek Albion Smalls. Yeah, I've got to say, obviously, as a bass player, I mean, there are very few bass players out there who this guy doesn't really, who we followed. Because there was something about his style that's kind of, in a way, it lends itself quite a word to comparison with like Adam Clayton and Peter Hook, although right. In a different way. I think you'd call his style has an almost sort of moronic quality.
Yeah,
to it.
I mean,
it's if simple
if, for those who don't know, and I'm sure you do. You know, you
oh,
would.
I'm sorry.
He's part of Spinal Tap, the band Spinal Tap, and you know, obviously, there's the famous documentary that we all saw of them back in the early '80s. But I mean, did you ever go and see them live?
No, I didn't. Even though they did Glastonbury, didn't they? They did something at Wembley, Carnegie Hall, I believe.
I saw them play in the '70s, I think, at the Hammersmith. I've still got tinnitus from that. I think that was the moment that I acquired my tinnitus. I mean, the loudest band ever.
Yeah, and so that's why it's very fitting, isn't it, that he's back with a single called Must Crush Barbie.
Yeah.
Where he's clearly taken offence to the whole sort of pinkening of the world, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, it's typically angry, isn't it, really? You know, and I think, you know, some people have to make a stance against things, you know.
It's very much a legs akimbo stance. As
and
well,
as someone said to me earlier, you know, the world is none more pink. He's obviously come to save us all.
He certainly has. He's the Oppenheimer of heavy metal.
I'm very, very excited about this. Should we get him on?
Welcome to the Rock on Tours.
Okay, guys, I'm ready.
But it's a big tune for sure. I actually wrote that originally for Tina Turner.
Of course, I had gone and found Joni Mitchell down in Florida and brought her back.
I've listened to a few of them and they've been really good, man. I've been sitting in the back of the car coming into London. They're brilliant.
That caused a big problem in the band, actually. I was having too much fun.
Thank you guys for still being around, still making music, still being into it, and doing this podcast. It's fabulous.
Well, I get the feeling that us three should go for a pint. That's what I think.
I'm in a band now. It's called Roxy Music.
You know this thing about the 10,000 hours of experience?
Oh, yeah.
To get good at something. When we recorded Arnold Lane, we'd done about 50 hours.
The Rock on Tours podcast with Gary Kemp and Guy Pratt.
Keep on rocking!
Is that Derek?
I think
it is Derek.
Like, that sounds like it might be Derek.
Derek, are we going to see you on Judas Computer?
Let me see. Start video.
Derek!
Hey!
What an honour to have you on.
An absolute honour. As a bass player, one of my lifelong heroes, one of the great influences.
Oh, thank you. And vice versa.
It's amazing. You've embraced the grey these days, I see.
Yeah. Well, looking like I'm not the only one here.
where are you living? Where are you now, Derek?
South London.
All right. You weren't drawn by LA or living out there?
No, I was neither drawn nor photographed in LA.
So tell us about this new single.
Well, it's called Must Crush Barbie. I was getting over, we can talk about what I was getting over in a moment, but I was getting over something unpleasant. And I woke up one morning and I saw all this pink turn on the telly. I saw all this pink turn on the computer. I saw all this pink. And I'm thinking, who splashed all this Pepto-Bismol all around?
Yeah.
And then I realized it's all about this bloody doll. Just selling, you know, spending, I don't know, millions and billions and billions of pounds to push this bloody doll down the poop chute. And I just thought, this can't be, you know, this is not right. And I jotted down this song and called a friend. We went to this little studio and bashed it out. And there you go.
Is rage something that you've kind of maintained all the time?
Yeah. You put your finger on it and you moved it around a bit.
I did. Yeah.
I mean, rage is the heart of a hard rock or metal or whatever you want to call it. It's all about rage. It's not about, you know, love or pretty sky or anything like that.
Well, that's funny you say that, because when you first joined, you joined the band just as they went with Spinal Tap. Sorry about this. Obviously, this is your solo work, but yeah. That with Tap, you joined them just as they were going into their flower power phase.
Into the love thing, yeah, right. Yeah. Well, you follow where the people go, you know, I guess, to a bit. But that wasn't, that was a different kind of music.
That's very true.
See, you know, that was a different sound. It didn't have that hard metallic edge.
And of course, black is your preferred color, I would have thought, as opposed to pink, isn't it? And it, you know, I mean,
you think black is my preferred color, do you?
There you are, in a Death Kills black T-shirt.
Yeah. No, I mean it's almost sickening, really. You know, this pink. Pinkitude.
Yeah, well, it's true. There is a sort of positive thing you could have done. You could have maybe made a record in support of Oppenheimer, seeing as that was the other thing.
Yeah, I could have. Yeah, that's right. Good point.
You know, because it was literally the destroyer of worlds, which is kind of, that's got to be, that's the gig you're after, isn't it, right there?
Really, but he was thinking too much about it, wasn't he?
He was.
Are any of your old bandmates on this record, or is it?
No,
we don't know. About?
No. Well, in a way, because CJ, who played keys and produced it,
CJ
is
Banston,
the keyboard player in Tap.
So he came after Viv Savage, did he? I can't remember.
He did when Viv crashed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, he didn't crash the way drummers crash, but I mean, he did have a great fall, as they say.
Because as a bass player, obviously, it's you know, as we all know, one of the most important things is kind of locking in with your drummer and being a section.
Oh yeah,
and that must have been quite challenging for you to have to kind of
over and over,
having to start again.
Yeah,
so often.
I mean, so it was Stumpy Joe we're talking about. I mean, there was Stumpy Peeps, I think, was one of them.
Stubby Peeps.
Stubby. They all died.
A bunch of Stumpies.
Yeah. They sadly all died.
A covey. I guess it would be a covey of Stumpies.
I remember one of them. Apparently, it was a mystery best left unsolved. Was the quote? You know.
Yeah. And that's still unsolved, right? My modern DNA techniques haven't changed anything in that.
Nobody's gone back to it. It's rare. It's weird. It's like, I think their lack of motivation.
But what about the other guys from the band? If you don't mind us asking, I don't know. I'm not quite sure how you've left things with the rest of Tap. I know, because you get together.
We've left them hanging.
Literally?
Are you not on good terms?
No. No, not literally. No, it's
David and Nigel. You
know, well, we last played together 2009 at Wembley Arena.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at Glasgow. And since then, you know, the occasional phone call or the occasional a message, a text, or whatever, what have you.
I mean, there must be just legal stuff you have to do.
There is legal stuff. You're very smart. Of course, there's legal stuff that gets us together from time to time. And that has popped up again now. Last I heard, Ian Faith, who used to be our manager, who died, he's dead. Someone has a contract that we signed with him, and is like waving in the air, going, "Really? Hey, you, yeah."
So you're owned by someone else now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we always were. I always had that feeling, anyway.
Well, one always is. It's just a matter of finding out how many people away from you that person is.
Yeah.
Exactly.
One of the things we do on this show, Derek, is we go back and we find out, you know, how you began and who you were. I mean, what was your upbringing? What were your parents? Were they musical?
My mum was. She left the family at the age of four. I mean, when I was four, she wasn't four when she left.
Right. That would be impressive.
It would be adventurous to join an all female band called the Hottentotties. And we never heard from her again. I mean, personally, we'd heard about papers. We'd see that, you know, they were booked into some club or something, but she just waved bye-bye. And my dad was much more down to earth. He had a good little business sanitizing telephones in the old days when they would do that. Oh, you know, they'd come around, you know.
No, we don't know. I'm interested in this idea of sanitizing phone, the whole sanitizing thing kind of came from Japan not that long ago.
Yeah, but this was the 50s. People were getting cholera. They were getting cholera and stuff. So I think
The plague was important. Was still around, wasn't it?
It was big in the Midlands.
And the West Midlands, I believe, to be precise, wasn't it?
The West Midlands, you're correct. And he would take me round with him on his rounds, you know, so I'd meet a lot of strangers because I was this little kid tagging along as he would sanitize phones. And, you know, he died, well, it's been about 15 years now, and I've often thought if he had lived into the iPhone days, he could have made so much money with a self-cleaning app.
Yeah,
exactly.
Of course,
you know.
There was no suspicion of any of the chemicals of bringing on his illness?
Oh, these were innocent days,
right? Simpler times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everything was just pure asbestos, wasn't it? It was all very straightforward.
Nobody asked what's in that bottle or what are the ingredients in that can or
What was the music that was inspiring you, Derek, at that time?
Well, I was listening to a lot of country and western, which was big, you know, a very twangy music. Right. I like the twang. Yeah. That appealed to my ear, the twang.
That's interesting because John Entwistle, for instance, with the Who, his bass playing, he was always inspired by Duane Eddy, who is, you know, very much a king of twang, which is not something you associate with bass so much. But
you don't, especially with the amps of those days.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
And why did you go for the bass? I don't know. You know, I ask Guy this question. I ask every bass player this question.
Yeah. Well, it's every bass player should have this answer. There's fewer strings and they're thicker. I picked up a guitar one time and I thought, bloody hell, I'm going to cut my fingers on this piece of shit.
Yeah.
That's very true. Also, I mean, I've probably sort of actually broken a string sort of in combat, so to speak, probably about, three times in my whole life. Whereas, Gary, you've probably had hundreds, right?
Hundreds of strings.
Yeah, exactly.
They break easy and they hurt when they break. They can go in your eye.
Exactly. You've put your finger on it. There's pain connected to the guitar that is not involved with the bass. So you've got to be a fool. No.
But did you come down to London? Were you part of the whole sort of Soho scene and the UFO club? Were you hanging out and, you know, in that world?
Well, that's where I found myself in TAP. I was in Soho.
You were at the London School of Design, weren't you? Don't mind.
I was. Yeah. I went there basically because I wanted the T-shirt with those initials. And, you know, like a lot of people in that era, you know, art school led to rock and roll. Yeah. But I first was with an all-white ska band called Scarface. And that was really my first adventure in music. And it was an adventure because it was probably I don't want to go out on a limb, but it was probably the least rhythmic ska band ever.
Right. Right.
And well, I felt a tension there.
There wasn't Jamaicans in the band, I take it.
No, it was all white men. Right. White boys, I should.
Yeah, well, yeah. Simpler times, again.
Yeah. And so just that world you were in, I mean, those clubs, I mean, that was the world that we always, you know, think back on as being an incredible place to have, and time to have lived.
Yeah, and it was. I was just walking through Soho of an evening, looking at the adverts on the telephone poles or the streetlight poles, you know, those little adverts that used to have in Soho. And I saw one that was not about a woman, and it said bass player needed.
Right, and you didn't assume that was some code for, you know,
no,
a set of services. I mean, you know,
and been
large
really
chest for sale sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was pretty straight ahead from there.
Right, because they would already been had they been successful as the Thamesmen? You weren't in the Thamesmen, I take it.
I was not in the Thamesmen. I was never a Thamesman, and never a bride.
Who was the bass player? I don't remember who that was.
Oh, what was his name?
Yeah.
He moved to Namibia.
Ronnie Pudding.
Moved to Namibia, and about a year later released a solo record called Doesn't Anybody Here Speak English? I believe was the name of the disc.
Did anyone understand what that title meant? I don't think...
Apparently not.
Apparently just getting it recorded was quite a feat.
That was a big one. That was a big one. I don't think they had the technology. I think he had to go to a neighboring African country. But so I joined TAP.
What was the audition? Was it an audition? I mean, was it much of an audition? Were you up against other? Were there loads of other hopefuls? Or
well, they were very nice in the sense that they met us one by one. So I never saw any of the other hopefuls. It wasn't, I guess, what they call a cattle call.
Right.
Or if there were, we were individual cattle, you know, in our individual pens. But it was, you know, they seemed pretty in a hurry. I think they had a gig that Friday, and this was a Tuesday. So they really needed a bass player fast, and I was fast and good. So, if I may say so.
You got on well with Nigel or David, or was there a particular, was one more difficult than the other? I mean, you know, they have strong personalities.
You're so famously, you know, as you said, you've got fire and ice. Was that kind of apparent from the get-go?
Oh, yeah, day one. Nigel is a brooder, if I may say so, you know, and... David just tries to set himself on fire every night.
Wow. Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he's a clumsy smoker.
I see.
Yeah. Hard.
But no, I mean, obviously, you know, we'll get onto it later, but we've all seen the documentary, and, you know, Nigel can be petulant, I think it's fair to say.
Yes. Petulant's a good word.
Derek, between you, in that way that guitarists can be.
All right.
Well, I'll sit this one out. No, you mentioned the hatchet job, and I just should say, you know, we regret that happened. This person, Mr. De Burgi, was with us on pretty much the entire tour, and pretty much every night we found the bloody stage. And what does he show you in the film? The one night that he doesn't, we don't find bloody stage.
Yeah.
Now, what is that? What is that?
I have to say, I've played Cleveland. I'm sure you have, Guy. I know the very theatre.
I think we played Cleveland together, Gary.
We did play Cleveland together. And it is tricky getting to the stage, isn't it?
It's very tricky. It took us a while. I seem to remember, I think we actually got to the gig early.
We did.
Because of that.
Because I know famously people have gone on stage there and the next band's been on already.
That's right. Well, I mean, you see it written in a lot of dressing rooms when you tour. Cleveland is no picnic.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. So listen, we support that, but we'll talk about the documentary in just a bit, because you famously did your wonderful miming of, well, I Love You to the Camera is...
Yes.
I mean, on that...
In,
on that song on, or was it the Flower Power? What was this?
All the Flower People Say.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Did you, and you know, was that spontaneous, or had you all sort of argued it out?
I ad-libbed
amazing.
That.
Amazing.
I ad-libbed that.
Because that's what it's about, isn't it? It's those moments, you know, that just...
Yeah. You know, I thought...
It's pop music history.
Maybe I should go into improv or something, because I said, you know, if that occurred to me, something else might...
Yeah, I mean, that was your equivalent of Bowie putting his arm around Mick Ronson on Top of the Pops, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You go with that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was on the Bob's Your Uncle TV show, which I think...
That's right.
Loads of them are on YouTube now. I mean, whatever happened to Bob? I think the police were after him at one stage, weren't they?
I think so. And then, oddly enough, he joined the police.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It was a 180. He pulled a 180.
All right. Because apparently, because he had been using the term uncle rather loosely, hadn't he, around people?
He worked with a colleague who he tell me if I've got this right. Whom he called Auntie. I don't remember what they were involved in.
Really?
No, I don't know.
Well, maybe we shouldn't be talking about this because we don't want to get ourselves in trouble.
Unless Auntie was perhaps some reference to the BBC, which of course...
It could be.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, in those days.
It could be. I mean, we were talking earlier before you came on about, you know, seeing you. You know, Guy saw you at Reading.
I saw you at Reading. It was fantastic. It was 1976 and Tap were between the Enid and Woody Woodman's U-Boat. And you certainly...
How were they, Guy?
Well, you took the... You know, they took the stage apart. I mean, literally, it had to be rebuilt afterwards.
Literally, yeah.
The bandstand.
We had to deal with that.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Guy, I know you're really influenced by it, but you actually even smoked a pipe for a while, didn't you?
I did. I've got to say, yeah, the pipe certainly came from him.
Did you put anything in the bowl?
No, of course not. That would be ridiculous. No,
of course not. Yeah.
But no, I still have a cocoon in my bedroom.
Is it true? No, but Guy, was it true that you even formed a band called Ceci Ne Part Un Peep? Was it more of your sort of prog?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, you're absolutely. We were signed to a small French avant-garde label.
Yeah, I think you were getting Magritte and Maigret mixed up actually with that. But the pipe—that's that's your symbol, really, isn't it, Derek?
Yeah, I think I was the first person to put it in the top of the strings.
That's right. Yeah, which is tricky. Like, oh.
Yeah.
You could only do that with a bass, really, couldn't you? You couldn't. You do it.
Yeah.
Yet just another reason how the bass is so superior to the guitar. I mean, you can just get a scrawny little Dunhill in a guitar if you're lucky.
That's right. So it's for everything. And you know, if you turn the I was going to say radio, but now it's, you know, whatever the source of your sound is, way down, you may not hear the guitar, but you'll still hear the bass.
That's right.
And that's the key, is to be heard.
What would you like people to be listening to Must Crush Barbie on? Do you know what I mean? Like would you like vinyl or...
I think headphones would be best. Right. Because, you know, the action in Must Crush Barbie is in your head. It's the rage is in your head. So, of course, if you're listening on headphones, it feels like you're having the rage right then and there.
That's right. I mean, it's a very insistent hook, must be said.
Yes, it is.
Not taking any prisoners with that.
And you can hear the plastic breaking on it as well. Was that a real Barbie you were crushing?
It is an actual Barbie being broken. I want it, you know, on a stack of whatever. That was an actual Barbie being broken in the studio.
Wow. Which Barbie is it? Because there are so many.
I didn't see a face.
Yeah, okay.
You didn't see a face.
I was in the vocal studio and she was being broken in the control room.
Marty de Burghi comes along and he presents this idea of a documentary to you. I mean, what was the situation with Tap at that point? I mean, were you in a good place when he approached, or did you
feel
that?
Well, you had a new deal, didn't you? It was a new deal in America, wasn't that? That's kind of what it was about.
Yes, and Polly something records, you know, they were all Polly something in those days. Yeah. I think they had contacted him and said, we've got this new band and you might want to follow them along. And he had been doing mainly adverts. He had done a very famous dog food advert in America with a trail of little puppies going to the dog food dish. And it was like, for some reason, it was very popular.
Oh, this is Marty.
Marty, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd done a documentary before. He had basically, unless, you know, you consider shooting a bunch of dogs going to a dog bowl a documentary, but I don't.
I wouldn't say that. I thought was interesting was the amount of stuff that was shot and left out. I mean, there was the whole thing you had was it an all-girl support band or was it just a singer who was a girl? I can't remember from that support band.
No, there was an all-female band, almost as an echo of my mom and her work.
That's right. Did that stir up things, emotions for you? I mean, I don't know. Did it bring...
It brought many feelings to the surface. He'd filmed a lot of them, and then it turned out didn't need them.
Yeah. But you gave him a lot of access. Did you sort of forget the cameras were there? Because sometimes there was really some embarrassing stuff going on between you guys that I'm sure you didn't really want. You obviously didn't have edit approval, did you?
No, and that's my point. We would have said, hey, Marty, what about all the nights we found our way to the bloody stage without a problem? Yeah. You know, be fair, show that too. We weren't people who could never find our way to the stage. You could never make a living in rock and roll that way.
That's right. When the night I saw you, you went to the stage. You found your way the night I saw you.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I saw you. I think everyone, and there are millions of people out there who saw Spinal Tap. And the reason we all saw you was because you found the stage.
Yes, you know. Exactly. It's like use the old noggin.
Yeah, people only remember the thing they see in the documentary, don't they?
That's right. Give me two tickets to the band that don't show up on stage.
And I would imagine that you didn't get caught in a cocoon every night either, did you?
No, of course not. I mean, it stands to reason. He was having his way with us.
Yeah.
He was having his way with us.
Yeah.
He had a motive. I don't know what it was.
I mean, one thing that was embarrassing was Stonehenge. I mean, being so small. I mean, obviously that was a mistake, but that was embarrassing.
Could happen to anyone.
Exactly. The very fact that you've got the balls to make a Stonehenge in the first place, you know, means that you deserve the credit for that.
Well, they put Stonehenge on the map, didn't they?
They did.
That gave the idea to those tunnel people.
We wouldn't even be going to see it.
That's right. No, you're absolutely right.
You wouldn't even be driving past in that tunnel if it wasn't.
That's right.
Us.
Yeah, you'd just be going straight down the A303, is it, or whatever it is.
Whatever.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering, Derek, what was it that, as the band's fortunes waned, that I mean, you kind of, what's interesting is musically, obviously, wasn't that big a change, but certain philosophically or whatever, intellectually, must a complete change was when you joined a Christian heavy metal band.
Yeah, but before then, Guy, Jazz Odyssey was a change, but, it, you know, that was...
Well, it's completely up to Derek if he wants to talk about Jazz Odyssey. I thought that was a quite earlier branching off, wasn't it? That was a sort of early 70s thing, I'm guessing. Everyone had their fusion moment, didn't they, when Jeff Beck went that way?
In retrospect, I've had one regret about Jazz Odyssey. It was a reaching out. It was an attempt to expand something. And it was two chords.
E and F.
If you and in retrospect, or whatever the spec it might be, I felt bad about that. I think it should have been one chord. I think it would have freed us up.
Well, I think it's the second chord that makes it an odyssey, though.
Mm. Yes,
perhaps.
But it's one.
It's
chord
your piece.
That
it's not
it
for
fact.
Me to not for me to say, obviously. But
yeah.
But it was never a chord, was it? Although I suppose you can't really recall something because it's obviously about the odyssey.
Yeah,
the odyssey happens in the moment.
It's improvisational.
Yeah.
On one of our records, we do have three excerpts from a Jazz Odyssey performance. We couldn't put the whole thing out because, as the people at the record company said at the time, there isn't enough vinyl in the world. But we had 3 4-minute excerpts on. It may have been Break Like the Wind, or it may have been the next one, but it has been recorded released upon unknowing public.
How did you feel about, you know, because what comes across in the movie is Janine, you know, and her disruption. Well, it could be seen as a disruption. I mean, is she still is she still around? Are you still close to her? You know,
I was never close to her.
Yeah.
I was not close to her. She was my problem. She was David's problem. And, I mean, she was our problem.
I was going to say, she certainly became the band's problem, I would have thought.
Yeah, she made us wear these astrologically inspired costumes, you might say. And that was a bit of a bother. But no, I mean, I was not close to her, except for one night.
Oh, really? Okay. This is the thing with bands, really, isn't it, Derek? You know, you start as kids in a gang, and then all adult life comes pouring in, and it just upsets everybody.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think adultness is the enemy.
Yeah. And, or having just too many... too much gender mix up. Otherwise, I mean, at least you were never going to be Fleetwood Mac, were you? You know, that level of problems.
No, that was taken.
I want to have a quick look at Lamb's Blood, which was you joined.
Lamb's Blood.
You joined the Christian heavy metal band Lamb's Blood, and your best known song was Whole Lot of Lord, which made
Number 25 on the Hot Jesus list.
That's right.
Was that the Christian chart?
Inside the Christian chart. That's correct. It was fun. But, you know, I did have to get a tattoo of a Jesus heart to, you know, make the band feel like I was one of them.
Right.
And then when I came back to Tap, they said, what the bloody hell is that? So I had to go get a tattoo of the devil eating the Christian heart.
Right.
Quite right.
You know,
too,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it worked out, but, you know, I don't think I had room for many more tattoos in that spot, so...
Yeah, you couldn't join a Buddhist band, really.
No. Well, it's too quiet, isn't it?
Yeah.
One hand clapping. It's not loud enough, is it?
Yeah, everybody clap a hand. It's not going to... Mm-hmm. Not really going to do it, is it? Oh, no, to answer Gary's...
Put your hand together.
Exactly. To answer Gary's question, because we go straight from that, don't we? Because it was after Lamb's Blood, it was in 1992 that you got together for Break Like the Wind.
Yes.
So that was...
And did,
that must have felt great, though, after the... I mean, I can imagine that backstage with Lamb's Blood would be a very different affair to backstage with Tap.
Very staid.
Yeah.
It was very staid. You know, it was like almost like school.
Mm-hmm.
There was an older woman who ran backstage there for reasons best known to that older woman.
So, you toured America with Break Like the Wind.
Yes.
And you broke up straight after that tour. Was it straight? It was straight after that tour, wasn't it? Or was it?
It's always after a tour we go, that's that.
Yeah, you've had enough of each other.
Yeah.
All bands are like that. But you've never ended up in court together, have you?
No. I was in court on a traffic thing once, but not... Not with them.
You did end up doing Carnegie Hall, didn't you? I mean, this is like...
Carnegie fucking Hall, as I called it from the stage.
Yeah, Derek? I mean, do you think that was appropriate?
Yeah. They wouldn't let us hang an advert on the stage. We were being sponsored by... I forget who was sponsoring us, but we had an advert that we were supposed to have over the stage? And they said, no. And we said, why? And they said, because it's Carnegie Hall. So they were up on their high horse right away. Yeah. And then we were trying to bring in the little people. And they said, you can't have little people on the stage. And we said, why? And they said, well, it's Carnegie Hall, isn't it? So that was what was behind me saying it's Carnegie fucking Hall.
That's
isn't
a
it?
Fair point.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Talking of the band splitting up.
It's a conversation. It's a conversation.
It's a conversation.
Isn't it?
You're right.
Well, nowadays, you'd have to bring the little people on, wouldn't you? You wouldn't be not allowed to.
I don't think you can. There's just some union thing.
Is it?
Or something.
Right.
I don't know what it is.
But, it's a very little union.
I think if you start bringing little people in, you have to bring a certain number.
Right.
Or it's unfair. Something like that.
That's right.
So you'd have to have a minimum number of little people. You can't just have one or two.
That's very true. Now, talking about with the band splitting up and you know, as you did multiple times, but the things that happened then.
We got good at splitting up.
Yeah. So, Derek, mate, Saucy Jack, what happened?
Yeah.
When? Where? I mean, you know, the world has been waiting for this.
Jack the Ripper musical.
Jack the Ripper musical, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a naughty one, you're a haughty one. I mean, come on.
Yeah, you'd think it writes itself.
You would.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And, you know, as it turns out, David was really almost fully responsible for that. And he couldn't find a spark.
Right.
You know, it's like everything else. You can say that's a good idea, but then you have to go do it. You know,
that's the easy bit, exactly.
Yeah, the idea is the easy part, and then you have to go bloody do it.
But listen, if you've registered the name Saucy Jack, you should still think about it in the future, maybe, because it's a, you know.
Maybe, as you're saying that, you just made a spark in my head.
Because we'd reignite the spark.
Because we had Tim Rice on our show and Don Black. I mean, we could chat to them if you like, you know.
No, but the spark you made in my head is, which would be much easier if you stop to think about it. Saucy Jack should be a line of sauces.
Yeah.
Everybody's going, where's Saucy Jack? Like you just did, and I'd go right here.
No,
right here in your own kitchen.
But would they be Jack the Ripper themed sauces?
Well, I'm thinking about that. It might give...
You could certainly have some fun with the names, although it could be...
Yeah.
You know, you're walking a thin line there.
I understand, but it could give the housewife a thrill. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got a frisson,
shall we say.
A frisson, a bit of a walk on the wild side.
You got into acting yourself, though, didn't you?
You know, it became clear to me that I couldn't depend on music for my livelihood all the time. And a couple of people in London showed interest in me. And one was a casting director from Italy who was looking for what she called disreputable looking guys. And she thought I was disreputable looking enough to be in Italian kind of... was called Roma 79, and it was sort of a, I don't know what you call it.
Well, you described it as a spaghetti Eastern, haven't you?
Yeah, that spaghetti Eastern is pretty right on the money. And so I did a few of those, and then I did some adverts. I was sort of one of the times that we shut down TAP. I was hanging around Belgium and Holland and some casting person saw me and put me in these adverts, one of which was for a, what would you call it? Not a dessert, not a candy, sort of halfway between
a dessert.
Food.
Would this be Floop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Floop, yeah. And it was great. I got into a bit of trouble. I wrote this jingle for them called I'm in the Floop Group, and which was pretty catchy. And then they came after me about 6 months later with a lawyer who said that I had stolen the tune of I'm in the In Crowd. old song called I'm an Indian.
I know it well. I've played it hundreds of times. Brian Ferry used to open his show with it. So, in fact, I was the...
Oh, really?
And it starts with the bass riff.
Yeah.
So was it...
I'm in with the Floop group. I'm sure Brian's actually sung that a couple of times.
By mistake.
And I said, well, all I stole was the melody. I didn't steal the words.
Well, there it is.
That's right. Absolutely.
It made it sound, you know, my feeling was it made it sound more familiar.
Yeah.
You're a free man.
That's true. And then you also, you were a judge, right, on a Dutch reality. It's interesting how the Low Countries seem to really attract you there, Derek, because you're on a, you know,
well,
this Belgian thing.
Well,
they
all speak English.
Well, that's brilliant.
But they all speak English, don't they?
Yeah, and they have W.H. Smiths, don't they? It's very familiar. It's very familiar. Yeah.
It's home-like.
Yeah, or home light.
It's not
if
home,
you will.
Or home light. Home light like. but yes, I was a judge on
Rockstars, I believe it was called.
Yes, Rockstars with a Z.
Yeah. Very good that. Oh, that
and
was it.
We were big for a while. It was my co-host was I'll forget her name, but she was the lead singer in Hot Garage. And we were doing pretty well, and then the company television company came one day and said, we're going a different way, kids. And first of all, calling us kids was wrong. And then,
was that with a Z? Were you kids with a Z, do you think? Is that what?
No. But the what we were being replaced by was Tomorrow's Hip Hop Heroes. Heroes with a Z.
Right.
They liked the Z.
And you just, hip hop wasn't your thing really, Derek.
No, never my
no,
thing.
No. You've had a few problems with some of your, I don't know, are you still with Cindy Stang? Is that something still going on? Or?
No, long ago. I was with a bunch of Cindy's, at least I called them all Cindy. I perhaps should have learned their real names.
She launched some startup tech with your royalties. I think there was a... You've had some issues with startups, right?
Oh, yeah. Well,
can I just interject here, Derek, just to say that because Gary will really understand this, because he had a problem with his ex-wife when they started up a thing called Wenge, which was
Wenge.
Meat
vegetarian meat,
which was actually full of meat.
It really had meat.
Yeah, we maybe got busted on that, but we've changed it now. It's much better now. It's a better product now. It doesn't little meat in it now. In fact, no meat. The vegans can eat it.
It wasn't my startup, but speaking of the Low Countries, but this was more recent. I was selected to be the brand ambassador for Bruegelcoin, which was a cryptocurrency out of Belgium. And I felt very honored until the bottom fell out of the currency was worthless. And, you know, I thought, well, these things happen. And then I found out that they were paying me in Bruegelcoin.
All right. Wasn't backed up by someone owning some Bruegel paintings or anything, unfortunately, which would have
been No, it was just a tribute.
Derek, is the band ever going to get back together again? Are we going to see Tap back on stage?
I don't know. You know, when we talk, we tossed it around like a ball. Should we do it? Should we not do it? Do you want to do it? Do you not want to do it? Should I do it? You know, it goes round and round. It's good conversation, but we never kind of come to a conclusion. So I have to say, ...
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you're a massive influence on people, not just Guy. I mean, Def Leppard. You know, actually, also, you must be really... Did you get pissed off that everyone started using the umlaut? Because I think the umlaut that's just unique to Tap. I mean, but then you've got Motley Crue, Blue Oyster Cult, Motorhead.
Yeah.
I mean, all stealing your umlaut.
That came up, and we were in a meeting with a solicitor, and he said, boys, I've got bad news for you. You can't copyright an umlaut, and you can't trademark an umlaut. And I think it was me who said, well, what the fuck can you do with an umlaut? And he said, it's up to you.
I'm sorry, Derek. Sorry to hear about that. Yeah.
And what about, and looking forward, what about Barbie? What are you planning to expand on Barbie and take it out? Have you got a band you want to take out yourself? Or
No. That was, it's what a single should be. It's a one-time burst of something, and in this case, it was rage.
Right.
Just released upon an unknowing public, and then you move along. I don't want to build the rest of my life around Bloody Barbie, I'll tell you that.
No, that's right. Although I think, I still think Oppenheimer is fertile ground for you.
Well, I'd have to go see it.
He's on to the next rage.
It's very long.
I think he's moved on.
Does he piss you off?
No. You need something that pisses you off, right?
No, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, you need the, by God, I'm going to get rid of this if it's the last thing I do.
He's got fire and bile in his belly. Derek, it's been so great having you on. Thank you so much.
Well, it's been a lovely conversation. I'm sorry about the little glitches.
We'll cut around it.
We'll carry it. Okay, it'll be great. Fine. But that was fantastic. And I must say, it's an honor. And what advice have you got for a fellow bass player?
5 strings.
No.
Right.
Really?
He plays 5, doesn't he? I've seen you play 5, I think.
Who are you talking to now?
Me?
No, Derek plays 5, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I play 5. I would never turn up. I would never go back to 4.
Oh, okay.
Because he got all that bottom.
Well, you have got all that bottom. There is that.
Big bottom.
Well, exactly.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Boing.
That was amazing.
Seismic. I think seismic is the word.
He's such a legend to have on.
He's such a... we have real legends, but there are some people where you just feel you've been changed.
Because we asked Nigel Tufnell to come on the show lots of times, and he's been really haughty.
He is. You're right. Absolutely right. And
he's refused. And
we've tried asking drummers, but then of course every few months you have to ask a different one.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you for listening to this extraordinary episode with Derek Albion Smalls, and we will be back next week with someone equally as genuine.
Maybe not as heavy.
Maybe not.
And rage-filled.
Until then, it's... thank you to our producer, Ian, today.
Yes, thanks, Ian.
And it's good night from me.
And it's good night from them.
Rockanteurs is produced by Gimme Sugar Productions for Warner Music Group UK.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.